a lot of people are in the same spot as you. A lot of people are very, very excited. They know that they're at the point where they can or should quit. And then they have all of those kind of fears, right?
UI stands for underserved investor. That's the homeowner who is struggling, is really not doing well because honestly, there's property managers that got too big that don't care. There are people like us, I think, can come in and double the revenue like you did.
All 5-star reviews. He got the top 5% listing badge, 122K more than he had previously.
What's going on, STR Nation? This is your brother from another mother, Emanuele Pani, here with Mr. Mike Riley. What's going on, brother?
Man, that was an awesome recording today. Awesome podcast. I'm excited to share with everybody.
Yeah. So we have a good friend, Mark Palmiere, on the show. I had the pleasure to hang out with him and his wife quite a bit. They're in the Conway Mastermind with me as well. And just watching him grow has been amazing. And now having had a chance to really talk to him and deep dive into his business, I can see why. Like, I can see why he's experienced such an explosive growth over the last 2 or so years. I took a lot of notes. So one of the things Riley says, like, please have your notebook out because you're going to be writing down quite a lot. Riley, what would you say was your favorite thing that he shared?
You're just coming from a place of service, when he's, you know, doing co-hosting and property management sales calls, I think is just like, he's coming from a place of service that he wants to serve the homeowners and the ones that fit his brand too. And I think that was really good. He's going to get into it very deep, but, you know, there's so many good nuggets in there that Mark's made. And I've known Mark for like 2 years now. He initially joined the STR Secrets Mastermind and just left his job. And he's going to talk about it a lot, but his journey has been really fun to see, especially for those who are struggling in a W-2 right now, or especially for those who are in sales as well. Like, it's not, entrepreneurship is not that much different from being in sales. So if you listen to this, you're going to get a lot of nuggets and also a lot of confidence from learning from what Mark tells you here today.
Yeah, 100%. One of my favorite metrics that he uses to see whatever or not he wants to onboard a property is whatever or not he would be comfortable sending his mom or his grandma to stay at the property. And like, that's such a good metric. And I used to use that like bachelorette kind of party as one of my metrics. I'm like, when I was married, I'm like, would Tasha and her friends feel comfortable going to this property and getting there at 11 o'clock at night? Or would I be getting a phone call being like, please find us something else. This is not it for us, right? And so again, I think a big thing is you're getting started and you work into quit your W-2 is you take more clients than you should. And sometimes you compromise a little bit. And this is such a reminder that one, when you compromise, you're buying yourself a job. And that's the whole reason why we're doing this. So anytime that I've compromised on quality of property, I bought myself a job. Because then everybody on my team didn't want to deal with this person. And then ultimately, where does that end? With us, right? Because we're the ones that take them on. And two is also like, I think having the properties that are more on brand, it just makes it more fun, right? Because then they're more fun owners to talk to, more fun properties to have. Even if you know people, you'll be more proud to share them with people. So if you have friends coming back into town, they want to stay at your property, it's going to be nicer for you to share it and have people stay. So I think it just, yeah, it makes a lot more sense. Anything else you want to share, Riley, before we go into the show? There you go. Yeah, without further ado, Mark Palmiere. What's going on, my brother?
What's going on, boys? Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So I've had the pleasure of being friends with you and your wife for a little while now. And you've had quite an amazing journey since you and I started hanging out. So I would love for you to take us kind of through how you end up kind of being.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I started off doing arbitrage. So I think I started off in 2021. We started renting out our apartment in San Diego. We would travel to like go camping during 4th of July or whatever the holiday was. And we'd rent out our apartment and we'd be like, oh crap. We would make our rent back in one weekend. And so we're like, wow, there's a business to be had here. So we got involved in arbitrage, started, you know, leasing other owners' properties and then subleasing them as Airbnbs. So that was great. We started doing that strategy. And then, you know, during arbitrage, the pros and cons of it is that you make a lot of money during the high seasons, but the low seasons is when you start really kind of taking some L's. So I took a few, you know, low season L's, and that's when I kind of got into the co-hosting model because I saw it as like a less risk. And that's kind of where I found SCR Secrets, and that's kind of where my path started with you guys.
I love it. At the same time, you were doing a pretty intense job, right? Like you're still working your W-2 when you were doing arbitrage.
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of like what motivated everything. I wanted to go to medical school. That was like my ultimate goal. But all the doctors I had talked to that I was working with as a patient care tech just kept telling me not to do it. They were all miserable. So I kind of pivoted and got into medical device sales. It was still in the medical field, but it was more entrepreneurial. So I could like run my own business. So it was cool. It was fun. You would like consult surgeons on how to use fine surgery products during their surgeries. And it was great, but it was a grind. I mean, you know, anytime a surgeon had a spine fusion, you'd have to be there. So if it was, you know, a 6 a.m. case, you're there at 5 a.m. and you might stay there till 2 a.m. Some cases could be like 18 hours. You'd be on your feet. And so it was more of a lifestyle job. You get called into the OR at like 2 a.m., things like that. So it just wasn't, I didn't see it as a sustainable job. And it was just a job I hated. So I kind of used that pain to motivate me to get out of it by kind of scaling that arbitrage and co-hosting business.
I feel like a lot of people that come from a sales background really excel being an entrepreneur because it teaches you a lot of different things. Like, you know, obviously sales that drives a lot of things, pretty much drives everything in entrepreneurship. But then you also have to learn about all the other functions of the business too, the operations, how the product works and everything as well. Would you agree? Like was that job a really good kind of primer for entrepreneurship?
Oh yeah. 1,000%. It was literally, I mean, it was, you kind of ran your own business. You had your own territory, you know, you'd had to like, you were everything from like sales, marketing to, you know, operations. You'd have to, you know, even though you would sell the product, you'd have to service it. So I'd go in as like the expert, you know, making sure everything's running smoothly. And there was a lot of similarities between that business and the business now, but it definitely kind of catapulted me into the business I'm in now for sure. So yeah, it was, as much as I hated it, I kind of, looking backwards, it was definitely needed.
What did that look like? How many units did you need before you left that medical device sales? Or was it like an income number?
Yeah.
Anything like that you were going for?
Yeah, it was at a point where like I wanted to, and I think I was at like 13 properties, but I think when I was looking at the P&L, I was only making like 10 grand a month. So I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And at the time, I mean, I was with Johnson & Johnson company. So I had like company car, you know, great healthcare, pension, 401k, everything. I had like the best benefits that like, it was like the epitome of a success that like, it'd be stupid to leave that. And so, you know, that's what was like the golden handcuffs keeping me at that job. But they changed their structure like that year. And they were like, hey, you guys are going direct, you're losing all those benefits. So like the whole reason I was there was because of that pension, because of all these benefits, and they just like ripped it away from me. So it was that moment I was like, I'll never work for someone again. And so at that point, I was just like, I'm done, I'm over it. I wasn't at a point where I replaced my income, but I just knew if I like jumped into the deep end, it was gonna force me to grow. And I don't think I've ever told this story though, but it was in that September, I quit my job, I bought a ring and proposed to my wife, and I had to get like hip surgery all in the same month. And I didn't like sit on the couch and milk the job and quit after I quit before. Cause I just, one, I didn't want to do that to the guy I worked with, but two, I just knew if I just put myself into this like painful situation, it was just going to like get me out of my comfort zone and grow. Cause I was just so locked in a comfortable job for so long. I wasn't doing anything with my life. So that's just kind of how everything unfolded.
Yeah. I love that. So when you quit the W-2, how many properties did you have at that time, and where are you at now?
Yeah. I had 13, and it was funny. Again, this is something looking back, I think it just happened for a reason. I had 13. I quit my job, and the next month, I lost like 5 deals overnight. It was an owner that was the first owner I didn't vibe with, lost 3 of his, and another 2. So I was like, oh my God, like, what did I do? The fear sunk in. I'm like, why did I quit my job? This was so stupid. Like, you had it all. And so like that fear kicked in, right? That paradigm kicked in of like, what are you doing? And it was kind of like, you make a decision, go back to your old job or like, you know, push forward. And this was like during the slow season too. And I was, you know, recovering from hip surgery, didn't have a job. So it was kind of like, you know, what was I going to do? And I just kind of bet on myself and just ran with it. And that's when I was joined Secrets as well and scaled that. You know, I think that next year added like, I think we got up to like back up to 14. So about like 10 deals that next year. And then now we're sitting at like 37. So yeah, a bunch of growth since then. I think it was that moment too, just kind of really bent on myself and like pushing forward is really kind of was like the pivotal moment for me.
Yeah, I love that. And so I would love for you to speak on that because I actually find this to be such a like interesting topic. Because again, I know I am very fortunate to have a lot of calls with people wanting to come and join Secrets. And a lot of people are in the same spot as you, right? Like a lot of people are very, very excited. They know that they're at the point where they can't or should quit. And then they have all of those kind of fears, right? The health insurance, that's a big one that you hear people. The 401k and all of those little benefits that you have, right? And so you decided to quit and then hip surgery and then getting married. So just to add extra things to the fire. And then on top of that, you lost 5. But you had the moment that you didn't go back, right? So talk to me about that. Like, talk to me about some of those conversations that you were having with yourself. And what are some of the things that helped you kind of maintain faith in what the plan was?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was in so much pain with that job, but it was like a prison. I didn't want to go back to it. It was like, I got a taste of freedom being like an entrepreneur, and I knew what I wanted. So like the desire, like we always talk about the desire, like the desire was there. I wasn't going to give up. And I think if you make that decision that like, I'm not going to give up, I'm going to make this work, it just goes so much smoother because, yeah, of course, those first couple months are going to be tough. And I think people like, they get 1 month of like hard work or, you know, get kicked in the teeth and they're like, I can't do this. Just like me, that fear came in my head. But I just knew if I just stuck with it, if I didn't quit, I wouldn't fail. And I think just that persistence is what people kind of need to have in this business because it's a roller coaster. And I think just being in medical sales, I kind of got experienced that. It was a roller coaster type job. You'd have highs and you have really lows because it was full commission. So I was all like, already kind of had the stomach for it. But so it transitioned well into this. But I would say someone kind of starting out, you just have to keep pushing and have faith that it's going to work out and understand like what your why is. Like, why are you doing this? I knew in that job, like if I stayed with that job, I saw the trajectory of it and saw the guys ahead of me, like they never saw their kids. They'd be going on vacation and they'd get called into a surgery and they'd have to cancel their vacations. And it was like acceptable. That was something they would tell me, like, that's something you will do for this company. And I was like, I'll never do that for a company. I don't want to do that after you just took away all my benefits. Yeah. No way. Missing kids' birthday parties. So I just knew what my why was. I knew I wanted to have time freedom. I knew I wanted to like grow my own business and live life on my own terms. So I just kind of like kept that vision and fought for it and was persistent to it.
And this is making so much sense now because this is like right when we first started working, all this was going on. And I couldn't agree more. When I was at Google, like I had an amazing boss at Google, but before that I had a different boss and he would come visit me in Nashville like every 2 weeks. And I always wondered why. I was like, the dude's got a family at home. And he just always wanted to come visit me and hang out and go out to eat and take all the clients out and everything. And then finally realized I was like, I want that guy's job. I'm supposed to have that guy's job in like a few years, 10 years, 15 years. Like, I do not want that. So that was like you said, it was just a burning desire just to change my situation. But I remember when you and I first started working together, Mark, it was you, that one owner was like, hey, this is not working out. He would blow you up all the time too. So it was like working for another boss again, because you had that one owner. But even when you parted ways, you were like, oh shit, God, I don't have any money now. Right. And then you just kept it.
Yeah, exactly.
Kept applying that faith that you were going to be successful in this.
Yeah. And that's a funny story with that too, is because, you know, working in medical devices, you'd work with neurosurgeons and some of them were horrible to work with. They, you know, talked down to you, didn't respect you. And because you're with the company, you had to support them, right? It's customer service. Where now in this business, like with that one client that was treating me that way, I kind of was like programmed to like stay with them and serve them. But we were working together and I was like, wait, I don't need to work with this person. And as much as it was hard to like, it is the hardest thing to like, it's like cliff jumping, you know, like if you ever jump off a cliff, like, you know, you want to do it, but your body doesn't let you. It's the same thing for our clients. You're like, I work for this. I want this money. But when it's not serving you, it's so freeing to just let that person go. And it just opens so much more headspace for more clients. But it's a terrifying thing to do, to like get rid of income when like you need it. But if you have that abundance mindset, no more is coming. It always ends up paying you back.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's so important, right? That's a conversation that we have a lot and I have a lot with people, is the understanding, like, does the client avatar fit in your brand? And then does their property fit in their brand? And most of the time when you have a headache client, sometimes they're not even that great of a fit property-wise, which leads to my thing being like, why? Like, it's a no-brainer, right? Like, you're just accepting less than you should for a property that is not as much in brand. And when you look at, you're probably not even making as much money as you thought you're going to make. But I know that you have experienced an explosive growth within the last couple of months, right? And I know that one of the ways that you've done so, and you're an early adopter, like what we call the UI method, right? I think most people that have been around our ecosystem know what that is, but kind of give, having been around the block a couple of times, right? Give some hints or like little tips to the listeners that are looking to use the UI method.
Sure.
What are things that you learned to make it the most successful?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, just some context, when we learned about the UI method, like that next year, I think I added like 17 properties, not all UI, but UI did a good majority of it. And then the start of this year, we've added, about 12 deals in less than 2 months. So scaling a lot faster, and UI has definitely had a big part in that as well. But so we're targeting Vacasa, Evolve, but not even those companies. Like in San Diego, there's local companies here that have kind of been around for a long time that I don't think are adapting with how Airbnb is changing. So we'll target those owners as well. And I guess like from a mindset perspective, from like the sales aspect, I think a lot of people struggle with sales. They think it's like, it's like shady and doing something wrong. But if you have the mindset, like you're actually helping these people, and I can give you examples of it, but like when I go on these calls, like I know I can help them because one, I've done it before and I'm confident in my service. But two, like the one guy in Mission Beach, he was going to sell his home. It was on one house back from the beach. His mortgage is like $3,000 a month. It's literally a golden ticket. It has a tier 4 license in San Diego, which there is no more of those given out. And he was like, I'm going to sell this place. And I was like, you're going to sell this? I was like, just give me a shot. Like, let me take it over. Took it over. We doubled his revenue. Just met another lady she's like 90 years old. And I just found out she has stage 4 cancer, and Vacasa is making her no money, and this is like her retirement. And I was like taking over her, and now we're making her money. So like, you have to understand, like, you're serving these people, like they really do need your help. And a lot of the times, like, there's no, like, you can talk about pitching people and cold calling, all that stuff. If you can just get a hold of them, they're going to reach back out to you because they need help. They need a lifeline. So that's like my favorite thing about the UI method and this business, is I just love helping clients make money. I love taking over their property and just like putting it under my vision and my operation and making it totally do a 180. I think that's like really impactful and powerful. And it's just like a great service to provide. So just like in a nutshell, that's my experience with UI.
Yeah, it's such a powerful tool. Cause like you said, I mean, UI stands for underserved investor. That's the homeowner who is struggling, is really not doing well, because honestly, there's property managers that got too big that don't care. They're playing a different game. They just want to, make their shareholders happy. And people like us, I think, can come in and double the revenue like you did, but then also fit into, these big companies, these big property management companies, they don't really have a brand. Like you, West Coast Homestays, has a brand that has a niche, and you serve certain clients in the best way. Just like, like somebody has a certain procedure that they need done on their shoulder. There's certain medical devices that are better for certain injuries and certain shoulders and certain body types. It's the same exact thing for property management companies and co-hosting companies, but there's not that many property management and co-hosting companies. There's not that many options. So exactly. I think we've done a really good job on creating your brand for West Coast, and you're only taking on like let the listeners know, what is your brand, Mark, for your company?
So we typically take on like luxury, larger type homes, 3 bedrooms and up. But I guess in a nutshell of what my brand is if I can't send my mother or grandmother to it, I'm not taking it on. So it has to be like really good maintenance, nice place. Larger type homes is what we like, because we like to cater towards families. And so there's 2 reasons with that. I've had experiences in the past where I took on some properties that it's another story, some nightmares. And it was in that moment I was like, I'll never take on a place that I can't send my mom or grandmother to, that I'm not proud of. So that's like, in a way, slowed our growth, because I am very picky on what we take on, but it makes for a better experience, right? You're going to get better reviews. It's going to be easier to operate because it's not going to have maintenance issues, things like that, is why we kind of do that. But then the second thing is, we like to take on properties that, at least gross like 100K in revenue minimum. Because I just never was excited by the people that were like, I have 500 doors. And I was like, well, how much are you making per door? And they're like, $200. I'm like, that sounds horrible. I'd rather have less properties, making more money, because it's less headaches, but also I don't have to have as much staff, right? It's like the more you add, the more you need to be responsible and have more people to manage that. And so if you can make sure you're making more per property, it just makes it for a better like business model. So that's kind of our philosophy with it.
I love that. I love what that. Does your team look like now?
Yeah, so, and that's the thing, we've scaled a lot. So I've now I'm in the building mode of adding more people. So we have two like people on the ground, and then myself, and then my head of operations, like COO, and then we're working on getting a handyman as well. And then three VAs.
Got it. So with the team that you have now, because this is a question that I'm always curious about, because this is how I think about the business as well, is like, as you're growing, you grow for the future. So this next person that you're hiring, realistically, how far can it take you? So is that the person that's going to take you from 37 to 67, or yeah, how long do you going to need more people?
I think, so we've just added, so it was really just me, two VAs, and the one ground person that was running pretty lean for like the last year. So in the last, like, honestly, couple months, like now we've added, you know, another VA and then two more people on the ground. And I'm pretty confident we can run with that to about 60. I would say, you know, two inspectors, managers on the ground, me, the head of operations, also here in San Diego, and then a handyman, and then we'll probably add on more handymans as well. I think our philosophy too is that as we scale, we should be adding on more handymen, because a lot of the work is handyman type jobs, but we can also parlay them into doing inspections and other things for us. And I think that's also just a good business strategy too, if you can bill back some of that handyman labor to the owners at like a cost effective rate to them. So it makes sense that they're not paying too much for, you know, normal handymen, but they're covering our costs. I think that's how we plan to scale with that too, to kind of keep our business lean.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what does Mark spend most of his time doing outside of cold plunge and going to get coffee? And
yeah. A lot of espressos and cold plunges.
Mark has a cold plunge at home. I, as you guys know, I love cold plunges. Mark has one at home as well. And like, that's how he wakes up in the morning. I've seen him on 6 a.m. calls, and without the cold plunge, I don't think he would make it, to be honest with you.
Honestly, I'm shivering. But I love that cold plunge, because it's it just like wakes you up and jolts you up, but just like you get control of your mind, because you wake up and you're like, I don't want to go in, and you just force yourself in. And just creates that momentum for the whole rest of the day. So it's a lot more than just the feeling. I feel like it's just like controlling of your mind and getting over that battle. So yeah, I love it. The cold plunge, gym, and sauna. It's like my morning routine is like 3 hours, I feel like. So I think I got to shave that down. That's why I wake up early.
But where do you spend most of your time? So are you mostly on the UI method and doing this?
Yeah.
Where is your time spent?
Yeah. Now I've added a lot of people to kind of take over the operation of things. Now I'm just focused on growth. So that's where I spend a lot of my time, whether it's, you know, trying to network with realtors, people in the area, as well as, yeah, doing the UI method, things of that nature to try to grow the business. Also kind of reaching out to property management companies here to try to see if they're in a position where they want to kind of, you know, get a payout and move on from this business. So my whole focus right now is making the business better, like making sure the team's all ready to go, and then, you know, growing it as well. And then, you know, just spending a lot more of my time, and, you know, we're in so many mindset masterminds and things like that. So just kind of getting around people that are doing cool stuff like us has been great for me too, to be, you know, on that vibration, because, you know, it's tough when you're an entrepreneur and there's not everyone else is in a 9-to-5. Like, they don't think differently. Like, you know, during the week we kind of chill, but weekends I'm working. So it's kind of like opposite schedules.
Yeah, it can be kind of lonely. I mean, there's not that many entrepreneurs or small business owners to really hang out with. So it's good to get around and be in a good community.
Yeah, for sure. I actually found, to just plug this company, but they're called Founders Club. Just started doing it, but it's in our area, and I think it's in other cities, but you can you sign up and they pair you with three other entrepreneurs in your area, and you go like play a sport, like pickleball, volleyball, stuff like that. So it's like networking, but with sports. So it's cool. And I think it's in a bunch of cities. So started doing that to get around more like-minded people. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You mentioned you talked to other property manager companies. That's something that we talked about on the show that we did with Riley. Walk us through, if somebody is also interested in doing that, walk us through in your experience what that process has been like, and what is your pitch when you talk to them? Like, what does that look like?
I do like the friend thing of more of like, Hey, you know, do you know anyone in the industry that's thinking of like, you know, looking for a big payday to get out of the industry? Just talk about how it's like kind of a pain in the butt and how things have changed and gone that route more of just reaching out to people to see if they know anyone and then you know, starting conversations with people that end up being interested and then just going on like their websites, trying to connect with owners, things of that nature, maybe targeting kind of UI in the sense of property management companies, look for ones that do have poor review scores. Overall, because you know, kind of like what happened with Vacasa, like they were sinking and Casago came in and kind of saved them. So similar mindset, I would say, is just you know, looking at ones in your area and networking with them and just starting the conversation. I think it's more of a long play. It's I don't think it's a hey, are you looking to sell like on the first call? I think it's just more kind of building that relationship.
I
So I
like
think
that.
if I was someone that wanted to be sold to, I would want to sell to someone that would support my brand, like. If I ever got to a point later down the line that I wanted to sell, I would never sell to a Vacasa. Like, that's not my brand. So I would want to make sure I would build the relationship with the prospect so they know who I am, what I stand for, what my values are. So they know, like, you know, you build this baby of a business, you want it to be given to someone that's going to like take it and run with it and do well with it.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier too about you gave two examples. One, you know, you took somebody and doubled their revenue, and then there's another one that you started making some cash flow for an older lady who had stage four cancer. But you mentioned doubling the revenue. How did you do that? Was there some sort of redesign or investment that they had to make, the owner had to make as well?
Yeah, for sure. So when we got in, that was that Mission Beach one. We got in. I mean, the furniture was horrible. I mean, it was stained. It was the house wasn't well kept. So he was under the impression that he knew he had needed to get rid of everything. So we came in and just kind of proposed like, this is what you needed to do. We'll redesign it. So that's what we did. We redesigned the whole place. We helped them furnish it. Took better photos, better listing description, and then just operated it better. You know, got him 5-star reviews. So he was at like 4.3 stars with Vacasa, terrible photos, and he was making like 90,000 gross revenue. Within a year, we took over, redesigned it, did everything we said, new photos, new listing copy, better pricing strategy, and then 5-star reviews. We're coming up on a year later. He's all 5-star reviews. He's got the top 5% listing badge like nationwide, and he more than doubled his revenue. We did 212K. So like 122K more than he had previously. So that fires me up because it gives me faith that like this is possible. And so like when I talk to new owners, I'm just very confident that like, hey, like watch this process, we'll do it for you. Cause it is scary to get someone to drop like 20 grand on their property to reinvest it. So they do need to trust you. But we knew like what we were doing with what we designed. Like I don't want someone to go spend $1,000 on a dresser. Like, no, let's spend it on wallpaper. Let's put it on like some outdoor amenities, like a Mission Beach. No one really had many fire pits. So we got like a fire pit table. No one really has parking. It's really hard in Mission Beach, but we had a 3-car garage. So we highlighted that, but then made one of the garages like a little game room with ping pong. So we just like found a way to be different in the market, which I think also really helped, you know, boost that revenue.
What tools, how did you do that? Sorry, but how, what tools did you use to figure out what to invest in?
So we AirDNA. So I went on AirDNA, looked at all the comps in the area, any like 3 bedrooms in the area, and just see, like looked at what they all did. And I even like combed through their reviews to see what people said they liked about the place. I think that's a big thing people might overlook is like look at what are people saying about when they come to Mission Beach. And Mission Beach, it's very like congested and parking's a big one. So I knew like that's something we needed to highlight and to preserve. That place has like 4 spots, which is like unheard of. So looking at the reviews was really big to see what people wanted. And then I also looked and saw what people didn't have. And I guess it wasn't like a Googling, like, is a fire pit going to generate 20K more? It was more like, what would I like? And like, I knew if I was traveling with my family, and that's what I designed for, is like, if I'm coming with my family, what would I want? It's like, well, after the beach, we're going to want to hang out on the porch at night. And if there's not patio lights, we can't do that. If there's not like a bonfire pit table, or a bonfire pit, we can't really hang out because it's cold at night in San Diego. So was just thinking outside the box of like, who's my target audience? Who am I trying to attract? And then putting those amenities in the place of what I would want. Because if it's good enough for me, I hope it's good enough for someone else. Was kind of like my philosophy.
I love that. What I was gonna ask you is like, okay, now that you have this guy, you have made him an extra $122,000. How are you using that for your next client? So do you have a case study, because I think most listeners, you can go back to a situation maybe where you have a property that is now doing much better than it did under previous management, or if the owner was co-hosting or managing it themselves, you just came in and helped them, right? So then how do you maximize on the opportunity as you're meeting new clients? Like, is that a video? Yeah. Is that a presentation? How do you take advantage of that?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, the first call, like getting them on, I just want to get their pain points of like, what are they struggling with? And then the second call, I do a presentation, like a Canva one, addressing their pain points. But I always show actually that case study and a few other ones and just show them like, hey, this owner was just like you. Bad reviews, wasn't making money, was going to sell his house. This is what we did. I show before and after pictures, which I think is really powerful, showing like what it looked like before and what it looked like after, to like explain to them like why this is important to like redesign your place. Like, which place would you rather book? And like, he's going to obviously say like the second one. So we show like the before and afters, and then show the review scores, and then show, you know, what they were doing in revenue and then what we did. So it kind of like makes it possible for them, because I think I'm like a very, like, again, I'm very empathetic in everything I do. Is like, if someone's selling to me and they tell me they can double my revenue, I'd be like, okay, prove it. Like, let me see it. Let me see the data. So I am like, here it is. It's not even a sales pitch anymore. It's like, this is an owner that was struggling. This is what we did because we know it works. This is his result. Here's five other owners we did it for. Like, you want to work with us or not? No worries. If not, it's not a sales pitch anymore. It's more of like, this is what works. If you have good reviews, good photos, good amenities, good listing company, and a good company, you're going to do well. And so I think people just need to have confidence in that when they are pitching these owners on, you know, redesign or taking over management, of just like showing them the basics of like, this is what works in this industry. It's proven. This is what we've done, and this is what we can do for you.
Yeah, I love that. And I know you're very passionate when you talk to owners. So how do you, because sometimes, and I was having a call with somebody yesterday, and one of the feedbacks that I had for her, she's so quick to rush through things. So she's like, the moment that the owner pushes back a little bit or like questions things, she's like, yeah, whatever. And if you don't want to do it, don't do it. Right. And I think there is a lot of people that like get into the mindset of like, ugh, people just want, they're just price shopping, or they're just information mongering, and they just want me to share with them. How did you reframe? Because I know you spend a lot of time on calls, and sometimes you invest a lot of times with people. So how did you reframe that from being a, ugh, these people are taking my time, to like, it doesn't matter, I come from service?
Yeah, exactly. And I think like Conway's helped a lot with that, but it's just going from a place of value. Like, anytime I get on a call, whether I want to work with the owner or not, I'm still going to deliver 100%. Like, I'm going to give them as much value as possible. And even people like in our Facebook groups, I'm not even pitching them. They're saying, hey, I'm struggling with my listing. And I'll jump on a call with them and give them like everything, like so much value on what you should do differently, all this stuff, just to give them value. And those people end up like calling me back saying like, hey, like, would you just mind managing for me? I like secretly, I hope they do reach out. And, but I'm always coming from a place of service. I think you just can't, like you always say, you got to give before you get. So you just have to always be like, you know, giving as much as you can to these people, because you never know. Like, yeah, it might be an owner that you think is shopping around, but if you do a really solid presentation and come from a place of value, like maybe he comes back, or maybe he refers you to someone else. I think just, you know, always have your A game on when you're doing these presentations, regardless if you don't know if it's someone you want to work with.
Yeah, that makes sense. And to bring Shogren back, a question that he would ask is like, to give some technical advice to people on the follow-up side, how often do you follow up? Are you like religiously following up with people after you have a conversation with them? What does that cadence look like for you?
Yeah. So it's first like we have like the cold call and texting and all that going on. First call, get the pain points. Second call, presentation. So I'll go over their listing. And that's, again, the value thing. I don't even know if these people want to work with me, but I'm going to go over your listing and say, this is what I would do with your listing. This is what the company's doing wrong. You have these bad reviews. These photos are bad. Look at your listing copy. It looks terrible. Your pricing strategy is terrible. I say it a little nicer than that. But I'm like, so I show that.
Everything is terrible. You absolutely suck.
Yeah. So I just I go over that and show them where they're lacking. And then I show them comps in the area and what those comps are doing. And if they were to make these changes, they could make like these comps. Then I show our case studies and then some other things in that presentation. But usually people are hopefully, you know, pretty interested that they want to work with us. So that second one, I'll like to send the contract and book that second meeting on that call. I think that's the hardest thing, is never get off the call without booking the next one, because people are busy, you're busy. and it keeps that momentum going. So then I'll book that next call and then go over the contract and sign it. People that aren't ready, I'll just kind of keep in a ticker. It depends. It's honestly, mine's, I don't have like a follow up in 3 days type of thing. Mine's more of a gut thing. Like if this guy, you know, needs a little more time, I'll give him a week. If he's someone that's like not really interested, I'll give him like 3 weeks to a month and follow up again. It really depends on the person. If like, you know, they just signed on with a manager, I'm not going to follow up them next week. That's going to piss him off. Like, I'm going to wait. Let me wait till like January, February. Now it's slow season. He's probably in pain. Let me hit him then. That's another good point too, is you always want to be scaling in your slow season. That's something that I learned in arbitrage, was because in arbitrage, it's really hard to rent during like the winter months in San Diego, right? So owners are more likely to be susceptible to rent to you arbitrage because they can't find tenants. Same thing with co-hosting. You want to try to pick off owners during your slow season, because that's when they're in pain. It's hard to kind of pick them off during the high seasons when usually they're probably making good money. So that's kind of been my philosophy with that.
Love that. Okay. So if people want to learn, I want to be respectful of your time. So if people want to learn more about you and everything that you do, and if they want to come and stay one of your properties in San Diego, where can people find out more about?
Yeah. Our website, westcoasthomestays.com. Same Instagram, West Coast Homestays. And then you can find me at Mark Palmieri on Instagram.
Awesome. Riley, any last questions for Mark?
No, just the final question. Yeah. What is the final question? What is your number one secret to success with short-term rentals?
Number one secret to success. I guess it's like one of our core values, relentless problem solving. I think whenever there's a problem, there's always a solution. That's something my mother always taught me. And that's just kind of how we run our business. An example would be like, say the fridge compressor's out, right? The repair guy can't get there till the next day. I hate when people are just like, okay, repairman's coming the next day, and they leave it at that. It's like, no, that's not solving the problem. Let's go over, let's drop off dry ice in the fridge, a cooler of ice. If they're not happy, let's give them money to go out to dinner. Like, just a relentless problem solving attitude with everything in our business, I think, is one of the key to success.
I love that. I don't think we ever had anybody say that. So that's great advice. Yeah. Always love spending time with you, brother. I am
super
proud of you for the success and just everything you guys are building. And we're looking forward to having you back on the show once you get to the 60-70 mark.
Awesome.
The lessons between now and that.
Yeah, I would love that. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Awesome. Guys, always great to be with you, and we'll see you on the next one. Ciao, guys.